Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Lisa Barretta. She is an author and she's brought out a book called Transformation, or to give it its full title, The Book of Transformation. And she says that it will open yourself to psychic evolution. She'll tell you about the rebirth of the world and the empowered shift pioneered by the Indigos. So welcome to the program, Lisa.
Thanks for having me on today. I was looking forward to it.
Great, yes. Well, now, to write a book like you have, although I haven't read it, and you talk about revolutionary DNA activation and such matters, I suspect you must have a very powerful and great background in spiritual knowledge. So tell us how you came to this point in your experiences.
Well, I've always been open psychically, and I grew up in a family that honored that. We were always in touch with what we felt, not only with what we saw with our physical eyes. So by the time I was, I would say, 8 years old, I knew all about my zodiac sign. I just naturally knew it. Then when I was 14, I started to give readings just for my friends. You know, and they would come back to me and they would say I was right about certain things or I had helped them through a difficult time. Then I got older, I developed my skills in astrology and numerology and divination in general. So I progressed and progressed and progressed. And after 35, 40 years of doing that, I realized that my clients were changing. They were no longer just wanting a prediction for the future, for tomorrow, for the next day. They were starting to tell me, they themselves were starting to sense energy, feel energy, or have an inner knowing, which led me to research a little bit more about exactly what's going on. Why all of a sudden is everyone suddenly psychic or more energy sensitive? So I started to do research, and you know, everything tied in with where we are right now. Currently, it's a very contemporary book because everyone is so concerned about 2012, the Mayan calendar, and they're fearful that it's the end of the world, but actually it's a new beginning for us. This is the time when we can really embrace the next phase of our evolution, where we become more in touch with our extrasensory psychic senses.
Yes, fine. Now, in the way you've developed, have you actually got contact with your guides, or do you sort of channel material even if you don't release it?
Well, a lot of the information, some of it was research looking at, you know, other works, but there are large portions in the book, and I've had many people ask me, it seemed as almost it was channel type of information. When I was looking for certain information, it would suddenly appear, I'd find the source, or I would meet someone who was an expert in it.
Yes.
So everybody need this information now. Hello?
Yeah. Yes, and we're here. Yes.
Okay. So it was a confirmation that, you know, I was getting the information from the right source and to put it out right now.
Right. So I guess what you're really saying is you're sort of putting out the thought that you want to know about all these things, and you're probably attracting all this sort of information to you, whether it comes via books, articles, or through other people. Would that be a reasonable summary of what happened?
Exactly. And a lot of it was, you know, being in touch and tuning in myself and my higher consciousness. I was guided to, like, where to go with this information, because there's so much of it out there that's either fear-based or, you know, it's coming from, you know, I didn't want to make it so much so that is too religious or dogma or too scientific. I wanted it to be just for us to really embrace who we are. We're both spiritual and physical beings, and it's time we really become familiar with our spiritual anatomy, which does have a sensing system, our extrasensory senses, our psychic abilities.
Yes, indeed. And of course, I started out somewhat similar to yourself. I've always had an interest in the different subjects that might have helped me with my understanding and evolution. And I love to make sort of records or notes. And But the point about that is, and this is the question I'm coming to really, is that you have to be fairly well evolved yourself to sort out of all the things you find or that pass before you, to sort out the things that are really relevant and important. So I think you probably consider yourself to be quite able where that is concerned.
Well, yeah, when I look at my own progress that I've made in the metaphysical field, I can see how I've honed my skills, I've developed, and I've actually gone through an evolution in consciousness where when I look back and I realize that, you know, my younger years when I was 14, 15 years old and people wanted to know when they were going to hear from a certain person or get a job or get invited to a dance, I would give them this basic information. But as I develop, you reach a little bit further. And when you reach further, you totally realize that time does not exist the way we see it. Time is a wave. It can go backwards and it goes forward. So now when people come to me for sessions, instead of telling them, yes, on Friday you'll hear about the job, I tell them, be open to all possibilities. If you're going to hear about it. I don't like to give the timing anymore because as we move up in consciousness, time eludes us. There isn't time as we know it. And I find a lot of people, my clients or just people in general, are very sensitive to this, what I like to call fast time. The day just flies by. That's because we're now, our planet is in a higher energy and we're feeling this higher energy. When the sunspots, when we have these solar storms, there have even been studies that show that ESP is heightened during a solar storm. So, we're moving closer towards the galactic center. We're moving into the inner neighborhoods of our galaxy. We're pulling in a higher, faster frequency, a different energy, where everything's taking an evolution. Even the way that people would normally go for psychic insight, they're realizing now that it's not so much for the when, what, or how, as much as like more of a direction to make sure they're on their own right spiritual path.
Right. So when you talk of we that are making this journey, do you mean simply the Earth, the solar system, or our whole universe?
Well, the whole universe is always constantly expanding, changing, evolving. And every little change that our planet, our galaxy goes through affects the other galaxies. Just like if, someone in the family has a problem, everybody in the family in some way is slightly affected or changed by it, whether it be good or bad. So, right now, our galaxy, our solar system, where we are in the universe, this whole area is going through an evolutionary change, which it's normal. I mean, we can't expect this planet or the Milky Way galaxy to stay just, never changing. That would mean it's dying, and that would not be a good thing. And so it is changing, and this has been seen by great masters, just not the Mayans didn't just see it. Even Edgar Cayce talked of a golden age.
Yes, Edgar Cayce in my early years was one of my favorites. In fact, I'll just say very quickly that when I was trying to find out what ancient people thought God was and what their spiritual beliefs were, I was really put on the track by an article that appeared in one of the newspapers about Atlantis and also touched upon the pyramids in Egypt. And from that time on, I was really hooked on all of Edgar Cayce's stuff. And I found it very, very useful to gain an understanding. So I think one would recommend anybody to read up his works.
Well, Cayce helped me tremendously. And what I think people need to realize is when we need to look for guidance, if we just link our own energy into the higher realms, the higher dimensions, we can link into that Cayce consciousness or any of the great, masters or people that are here to like help us through our evolution. I went through a period, I would say probably about 19 years ago when I first became familiar with Cayce. One of my children had a medical problem. They said that he had epilepsy. And I did not feel that, just something in my gut told me that traditional medicine was not giving me all the information that I needed. Something was missing. Next thing you know, I was guided to a book, and this book guided me onto another book, and I eventually found Cayce's book on on healing. And I followed the instructions, the vitamins. I put out a lot of positive intentions. And this is a true story. When I brought him back to the neurologist to have him tested for the epilepsy, and this was probably weeks later, 8-9 weeks later, they did all types of tests. They called me into a room, and I thought it was going to be something bad. They told me, take him home. He's neurologically perfect. And I told them what I did, and they said, well, you know, we agree with you. It does work, but, you know, we can't tell you that that's the only way to treat it because we are medical doctors. But that was when I first had one of those aha moments where, you know, differing healing modalities, we don't have to just treat the body. That's wrong. We need to treat the body and the spirit. If your car is not running properly, you just don't take it and get it washed. You have to take it and find out what's going on with the engine. So that is when I really started to delve a little deeper. And it did. It took me a good 15 years of, you know, just looking at things and talking to people and seeking things out and being in touch with my own guides to finally put this book together, which, even though it's not a very thick book, it was a difficult book to write because I'm just trying to keep the information about who we are, our transformation, what's 2012, the open portal to, and keep it as simple for everyone to understand, even for the people who are not familiar with all of the things I'm familiar with. And it's like a good starting point.
Yes, indeed. I agree with that. Does that mean in that period of time when you were involved in sort of healing that you were a healer? I mean, did you give healing sessions to people?
Well, at the time when I was going through that, one thing led to another. You know, there was a little bit of like a personal disruption in my personal life. You know, I was married, the marriage ended, but, you know, at the time it was part of the journey. And I realized afterwards that when your frequency changes, sometimes, you know, as you change, it's not that you're leaving other people behind, but you need to move on, you know, and it put me on a totally different path. I took Reiki, and prior to doing the Reiki, I was healing people through my sessions. They would come to me for intuitive sessions. And I had so many people tell me after a session with me, they felt much better because I tried to empower my clients rather than take their power away and tell them what has to be done or, you know, what's going to happen. I always leave it open for them so they realize that no matter what I'm telling them or whatever information is coming through, they are the last word. They're the ones who determine what happens.
Right, so... are you in fact sort of psychic in the sense that you can give people readings and healing as well?
Yes, and I'd like to think of a good psychic reading as a healing because what you're doing is you're helping people who have blocks or they keep hitting the same problem over and over again. They don't know why. It's, you know, my ability to go in and find out like what is amiss within their own energetic field that needs to be transmuted and shifted from a negative charge to a more positive charge. And once you identify that, that helps them so much because many people find that they keep on attracting the same type of people into their life or their same type of job, and they don't know why they're caught in this circle until they really consciously, and they make the conscious adjustment themselves and through the help of an intuitive reader or maybe just from tuning into themselves, that, you know, the problem usually lies within yourself, and then it will manifest outwardly through other situations you attract to you. So that's taking responsibility. And once you start to take responsibility for your own self and your own frequency, then you start to live consciously, you start to tap into the universe, synchronicities happen, the information you need comes about when you need it, the people that are supposed to help you along are there, and it's great. Everything starts to connect in, and that is what the DNA activation is all about also. We are meant to go beyond just the two strands that code to protein. There are additional strands that code to frequency and light, and they have done observations and studies, and they can see how, you know, when they see these other strands start to, you know, react to frequency and light, they find that there's also heightened psychic abilities and people that connect more into what we call spirituality, but not dogma, but the spirituality of almost connecting into some type of divine intelligence.
Yes, and is this DNA that you talk about that's called the junk DNA?
Well, that's what they like to call it, the junk DNA, because they've never realized what are these extra strands for? It's really not junk. If you look at your iPhone or something, you may have applications on the phone that you're not too sure what they're for until you get them activated. Now you realize, wow, it just made my life simpler. Same thing with our DNA. It's the extra strands. As we go through this next phase of our evolution, now the time is ready to have it activated. And where we are right now, passing through the photon belt, there's a highly charged energy, a highly charged ions, frequency, light, energy. It's all the same thing. And it is having a direct effect not only on the planet, but also on us. And our DNA is responding to this extra light that we're pulling in. It could be the precursor to what we call the enlightenment. And the enlightenment is really where we have full capabilities of all of our senses. That is to include the extrasensory senses too.
So you're really talking about an expansion in our consciousness.
Yes.
Right. So when we reach 2012, as far as the 21st of December is concerned, and I'd like to know whether you agree in general terms that that is the time of ascension. Would you think it would be very much expanded, and we would have, I think it's a 12-13 DNA setup?
Well, what we're finding now, you know, everyone is looking at the Mayan calendar, and the Mayan calendar goes by the different Bakhtum cycles. So what it is, it's the end of one cycle and the beginning of another. The way the planets will be lined up, you know, with the winter solstice, it's going to pull in a certain energy. I don't feel that it will be just on that day that, you know, that's the one day set aside for enlightenment. I feel all along we've been working towards this, a you know, new consciousness. And I think if you look back, just if, you know, especially over the past few years where we've started to, you know, realize the false structures and the different things that were put in front of us. We're starting to see they were all just an illusion. And that doesn't mean you could put your hand through it, but it, you know, you think you have your money, then you find that the banks collapse, your mortgages aren't good anymore, your jobs are scarce. And you find out, what do you really have? You have yourself, you know, and that's the one thing that's important, and that the material world, yes, it does make for the creature comforts, but there has to be something more than that. And I feel that as we move up to this point, 2012, it's more of a unified type of a mindset where everyone I talk to is aware of this, you know, December 21st, 2012, and it's going to be the string effect where one person enlightens another and one enlightens another and one enlightens another, where we are hoping that that's going to be the beginning of global consciousness, where we live consciously, which means we're aware, we stay in the moment, and we realize that, you know, what we're doing so we don't hurt other people. And when you live consciously and you realize you're all connected, it raises the vibration of the planet and it raises your vibration also. And that's what this DNA activation is too. That comes from a higher vibration. And who wouldn't want to be more enlightened? The more enlightened you are, the more you open yourself up to all of the creative possibilities and potential that we have within us anyway.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And referring to 2012 and the Mayan prophecy, I think you're also correct in as much that if we're not careful, people only think of that one particular day, whereas the ascension that's going to take place, which you could call a key moment on that day, is actually part of a very long process that's been going on for some time and will continue after that date. I think expanding our consciousness possibly goes on to an unlimited degree, one that we may not yet understand. So what's your view about the period after ascension?
Well, the period after ascension, I feel that, you know, now we are moving into this higher energy lane of the, you know, of the galaxy. We're in the fast lane now. We're pulling in the faster frequency. So it would be almost hard to escape when everyone around you is starting to all of a sudden evolve, get it, be more energy sensitive. When you're energy sensitive and you're more psychic or aware, it means whoever you're dealing with now also has to be authentic. Lying and cheating are very difficult because it's easily picked up now. It's more easily visible because we sense the energy. And also at this time, too, you know, even in biblical writings, it says even the dead will rise from their graves. I don't think that means people are going to come out of the ground, but I believe that what it does mean is we are going to be aware of spirit energy. We're going to be aware of what, you know, went before us. We'll have more of a keen awareness of consciousness. You know, that like the overlapping consciousness that goes into the fourth dimension, the fifth dimension, and it gives us a whole new frontier to explore.
Yes, I think you've certainly done your research very well. You're covering most of the areas that I can agree with. So do you think that as a result of this upliftment in the vibrations, which is going to affect us, that it will have also some effect on the earth itself, and we might be rising up with or into a new earth itself?
I definitely believe that. And, you know, I've had some people tell me, well, what do you mean? That's crazy. I said, no, it, you know, the earth has ley lines. The earth has chakra centers. There's energy portals there too. We could even see that the earth goes through its own shifts and changes, earthquakes, volcanoes. These have been going on for years, and they're just not isolated for 2012. You know, everyone's waiting for some big devastation to come on that day. But what it is, that the sun has a more powerful effect on us. We're moving closer and closer, and the different vibrations from the stars and the planets, all of these things contribute to this new environment we're in. And the earth itself, I feel, is going to raise up its consciousness. You know, the atmosphere of the earth, the vibration of the earth is going to change. And, you know, I feel that we have a choice. We're either going to evolve along with the earth, and that doesn't mean we're going to perish if we don't, but you know, when you stay at a lower vibration, can you imagine there's quite a difference between being an ant on the ground and being a human being? So it's going to be a vast difference in the quality of the life that we experience.
Yes, indeed. I can see that must be applicable in that case. Do you think that people do have a choice in the sense that would their present level of consciousness actually dictate where they go?
I do, because we all don't evolve at the same time. Everyone, you can have one, flowering bush, but not every flower is going to bloom at exactly the same time. So wherever you're at on your own level of consciousness, you know, if you haven't been all the way up there yet, it doesn't mean everyone's going to move into the new consciousness and the new earth and you're left behind. You'll come along too, you know. The frequency of the planet is going to change, and in turn, it's going to affect our own frequency. So I feel most people are going to finally get it and realize that, okay, you know, this is the way to go towards the light. Even the moth knows to go towards the flame. So we're all going to instinctively know, for our own evolution and our own survival, the fittest will survive, to go more towards the light, the enlightenment, and the right path. And for those who choose, you know, it's not for them, you know, I imagine that, you know, eventually they will hopefully all follow suit, or if not, they will, you know, stay within the three-dimensional consciousness, which is very limited. It's as if, you know, a baby stays in the playpen until it's, you know, a young child of 7 or 8 years old. It's frustrating, limited, and you really can only go so far.
Yes. Now, on the front of current cover of your book, obviously it's got the title, The Book of Transformation. You also have an added few comments, and one of them is open yourself to psychic evolution. Now, how do you cover that in your book? What is your message for people?
Well, the psychic evolution, what I wanted to do is I wanted everyone to be aware of the anatomy of their electromagnetic field, their spiritual body, because that gets overlooked, and that's not something they teach you in biology. So what I did is I laid it out, I believe it was chapter 2, about the chakra centers on your body. They're very important because they're just not where we take in our energy for the energy body, but they are also the central points for certain psychic senses. Just like your tongue, you have your tongue to experience physical taste, you have your physical eyes for physical sight, your fingers for touch. Well, in the body, in the electromagnetic body, the spiritual body, the root chakra at the base of the spine, that's actually where we develop psychic smell. Our psychic smell is derived from that root chakra area because that's where we get our grounding, that's our basic instincts. When you go to the sacral chakra around the navel, that's where we have our psychic taste, which is basically our taste for life. Some people might say, well, what's that? What's psychic taste? Well, you may walk into a room and suddenly you'll taste something, maybe like a minty taste or whatever taste, and you'll be able to relate that to some type of energy that you're picking up, either about a person who's already passed or about a situation that's currently going on. You're just not going to be picking up spirits that have passed. You're going to be picking up the energy of everything, your environment, situations you find yourself in, interactions with other people. The solar plexus, where we have our intuition, that's our insight. The heart chakra is very important. That's expanding now. And that is where we have our psychic touch. That's our healing touch. When we touch somebody with our words, with our energy, even with our hands, that's our psychic touch. That's like where we will be able to heal people. The throat chakra, that's our psychic hearing. When that chakra is opening and it's pulling in the energy and it's spinning in the right direction, that's when we're able to walk into a room and hear a message or get a message or channel a message from a higher being. The third eye, everyone's familiar with that, the pineal gland, that's between the two, a little bit above the two physical eyes. That's where we have our ESP. That's where we pull in the ability to remote view. And it's also the portal for when we have our out-of-body experiences. Then finally, we have the crown chakra, which sits on top of the head. That relates to the pituitary gland that works in tandem with the pineal gland. And this is where we pull in divine knowledge. But as we evolve and these 12 strands of DNA become more activated, other chakras are going to open up also. There's the soul star chakra, which pulls in the divine love when we're ready for that. And then the two little sub chakras. Some people have noticed during this transformation, there are a lot of physical changes that people are experiencing too. The Buddha belly, some people are getting a little bit of a belly, even though they're not really overeating, because this is where we're processing the stress of the physical world and releasing it so we can shift into the lighter energies of the higher consciousness. And the diaphragm chakra is changing too, because this is where we're processing our intentions.
So did you say the diet changes?
The diaphragm. The diaphragm's going to change.
Okay.
Oh, but our diet is changing because we're realizing that even the food that we eat has a vibration. Mm-hmm. Some people have been turned off to meat because they don't like the vibration they pick up from. They're sensitive to the way the animals may be slaughtered. Some people are craving certain, a lot of people are craving, believe it or not, oatmeal, because oatmeal is rich in vitamin B, and that vitamin B is good because it's good for our nerves, and our nerves need to be well insulated as we pull in this higher energy so we don't short circuit. Just think of a wire. A wire needs insulation. Depending on where you're at in your own level of transformation, you will be guided to get what you need. A highly recommended mineral that we need is magnesium, which is very good for transformation. A lot of us are deficient in that, and that aids us. It aids the metabolism because our whole body metabolism is changing. And some people may find that they need the B vitamins such as niacin and B12. And it's important because when you're aware that you need these things, when you go through some physical changes, instead of running to the doctors and getting some type of a pharmaceutical quick fix, you'll realize that you need to use an integrated method to pull you through this. You just don't need the scientific method. You need the energy healing too, because it's the energy body which is, really starting to bring about the change that we're seeing in the physical body.
So you mentioned magnesium there. Where would we get the best source of magnesium?
Well, magnesium, I think you can find that in whole wheat bread. Or you could buy a supplement if you go to a health food store. You know, it's good to make sure it's as natural based as possible. And it's very good, and it does aid the body's metabolism. Some people are finding that as we go through this shift and this transformation from Homo sapien, which means logical man, to what I like to call the Homo sentient, which means the conscious man, some people are putting on weight, and they're like, you know, why this shift in my weight? Well, you may hold more fluid because water acts as a conductor of electricity. Also, if it's not water weight, it may be a little bit of extra fat, only because the fat is a temporary, and I do say temporary, insulator, because once you shift into the higher consciousness, everything is going to redefine itself. Our bodies are changing. There's no doubt about that. I've talked to actual MDs, medical doctors, not just homeopathic doctors or holistic practitioners, and they agree. They see a lot of people coming in with, you know, aches and pains that are unexplainable by typical scientific method, because we have to keep in mind science deals with the physical world. We're dealing with the energy world. Science always needs a direct formula to get an answer. But when you go into the world of consciousness and energy, it's open for all possibilities. Everything is random. And, you know, you just have to almost learn to sense and feel what is right for you. And that's good, because we're becoming more energy sensitive and we'll be led to what we need.
Right. Now, you mentioned chakras there and gave us a very good description of each one. Can you personally see the color of chakras?
Well, I actually have a section in the book called about the aura, which is the energy we put out. As we become more aware of energy, we will, you know, color has a vibration, sound has a vibration. Mm. You'll be able to look at someone and sense the color of their aura, because we'll see it as a color because the vibration is going to be slowed down enough for us to view it as a color. It's not going to stay the same color at all times. I've had people say, well, what color is my aura? And and I explain to them, it changes. It's almost a mood ring. When you're in a very good mood, it'll be one color. If you've had a bad day, it'll be another color. The thing that you want to watch out for is that there aren't any holes in it or dents in it, because that shows there could be some type of a problem that's in the energetic body, that if you don't catch it there, it may manifest and show up on the physical body. So the more aware we become of, you know, auras and seeing colors and sensing energy, we'll actually be able to go in there and, you know, do a healing in the spiritual body before it will manifest in the physical body. That's when you read a lot of, you know, ancient texts about they were able to heal themselves. They lived longer lives. It's because they were quite aware that anything happened in your energy essence, you know, is going to have a direct effect on your physical body.
Yes, and it's obviously a pity that with that knowledge about chakras and being able to, if you can see them, to observe perhaps where there is something wrong before an illness develops, which could be treated perhaps and stopped. It's a pity that in the medical diagnosis that they perhaps should include people that can see the chakras. But I wonder why it's never been developed over the years.
No, it's a shame. At one time, back in ancient Greece, before they could be a medical doctor, they also had to have a knowledge of astrology. Mm-hmm. And because they understood how, you know, knowing the stars, knowing about frequency, and also how every organ of the body has its own frequency, they would, you know, make a better determination about what was wrong with the person. But over the years, what happened is through, I guess, our own ego and arrogance, we felt we didn't need to do this anymore because we were just going to develop a pill and then that would cure everything. But I've heard more people have worse effects from the side effects of a pill than from the actual illness itself. You know, sometimes, you know, it does more damage than good, too.
Yes, yeah.
And I even have Plato, and I believe it's in the beginning of chapter 7. It was like the greatest mistake in the treatment of disease is that you know, physicians, there are physicians for the body and physicians for the soul, although the two cannot be separated. Even Plato realized that, you know, you really need to have, I feel this is where we're going as far as medicine. I feel we're going to take quantum leaps and we're going to embrace quantum medicine where we heal on all levels. And Reiki is amazing for that. When I took my Reiki course, I had no idea what Reiki was. I thought Reiki was massage. That's how ignorant I was of it until I found out it is channeling universal life force energy, and it will go where it's needed. If someone has not only a physical pain, but an emotional pain or some type of an area in their life that lacks energy, you can pull in that universal energy and actually start to initiate a healing. I think that's going to be very important. And I have also noticed that a lot of hospitals over here now offer Reiki, you know, in addition to the regular healing methods too. Most of the bigger hospitals will offer, have an area for Reiki. And if someone wants it, they can request a Reiki treatment.
That's very good. I suppose it's taken them a long time to recognize the value of some of these type of methods, which have really been shunned for many, many years. Now, do you think with this with the incoming higher energies and our response to it, where our levels of consciousness grow and our bodies are changing, that in fact we are becoming more healthy anyway?
I think so, because if you look at the word disease, it's D-I-S-E-A-S-E. It means not at ease with something. A lot of our illnesses are caused by stress, because what stress is, it starts to, you know, our cells are in constant communication with each other through a frequency. But when we're stressed out, we cause a blip in that communication system. The frequency gets lower, and that's when disease starts. I even have a chart. And chapter 7 of the book deals a lot with the healing. You know, the earlier chapters bring us through the shift and what's going on and the physical changes and the global changes. But once we get into chapter 7, I explain how, you know, the heart's frequency is usually 67 to 70 megahertz. The lungs are usually 58 to 65. And stress lowers your frequency. You know, a very, very healthy body, a person who has good health, a healthy body usually has a range of 62 to 78 megahertz, with disease beginning at 58. So if you're stressed out and you're lowering your frequency, you know, down and down and down, you're opening yourself up for an illness. So if with this knowledge, we empower ourselves. It's like, okay, I am not going to go that way. I don't want to succumb to the stress. And what causes stress? Our attachments to the material world, our attachments to emotions that are linked maybe into a relationship or a job that we refuse to, you know, let go of. When we start to attach to things that weigh us down, we start to build up stress in our life, you know. And I really feel that, you know, Eastern medicine is, you know, more gentle than Western medicine. I've interviewed Oriental physicians, and they have a different way of healing. It's a more gentle way, where it seems Western medicine, everything is either there's a pill for it, or they want to cut, or, you know, keep the pharmaceutical companies happy. That's how come I feel a lot of the natural remedies have been swept under the rug, because there isn't any money in it, not any big money.
I think you're absolutely right there. My understanding of Chinese medicine in general is that they actually treat the person so that they don't develop the illnesses, rather than wait for them to happen. But would you say that's generally the correct way?
Exactly. You know, what they do is they go in and I've had diagnoses by Oriental doctors, and I'm a big fan of acupressure. Not acupuncture, acupressure, because acupressure, your body has certain areas that when they are pressed in, almost acts as in the fashion of hitting the reset button on a computer that isn't working or a piece of machinery that is malfunctioning. It releases stress. It works on your lymphatic system. It helps just like drain different things. You drink a lot of water, and it's really, it's like hitting the reset button. But they do have a different method. Well, they go in and they assess everything. They look at your tongue because the whole body is visible through the tongue in their form of medicine. And also the bottom of the foot is very foretelling to them. And they can tell a lot just by looking at your tongue. That's how come, you know, sometimes you'll see the doctor say, stick out your tongue. And we think it's just to see what color it is. But in Eastern medicine, they can see by the condition of the tongue, the condition of the body. And they'll go in and there's different meridians that they'll assess. And they'll find out, like, what you're lacking energy-wise. You know, it's all about with qi, getting your energy moving. And once you find where the system is blocked, it's like opening a drain. And you relieve the stress point and everything flows. And one of the most natural ways of, I know in their method, Eastern method, for taking care of tumors or to, you know, help retard the growth of cancer is to use ginger and turmeric. You know, they're big fans of ginger and turmeric. And studies have shown that these two things actually do assist and helping to shrink tumors. And I feel that there's so much good out there that's natural, that if we would embrace that, we would find a more gentle way of, you know, healing the physical body. Then again, you have to incorporate healing your energy body. You just can't concentrate on that physical body. You have to work with both of them.
Indeed. And I think another method of diagnosis that I think is very much ignored, which from what I've read about it is very accurate, is iridology.
Oh, where they look at your, is that your eye?
Yes, you can sort of get a printout of your eye and it gives you information on most medical conditions in your body.
Exactly. I mean, there are that's, and when you think about how, you know, how can someone say, take this pill, it'll make you feel better, and then you give that same pill to maybe 40 other people that have similar conditions, when we are all individuals? When you stop to think about it, there are no two people on the face of this earth that have the same fingerprint. Yeah. You know, we are also very individual. So everyone's treatment needs to be, you know, fine-tuned and tailored for their needs. You can't just find one pill that will cure all. And that's where I think we're missing it. We're trying to, like, mass cure people, but I feel that we do them more harm than good. But you're right. I know about when you look at someone's eye. I've heard about that, and that's very cutting edge, and that's the way to go for the upcoming, you know, consciousness and the way of living.
Yes, indeed. And when you spoke of acupressure, I do know, and I suppose it's quite logical, that there would be books around which enable you to actually treat yourself.
I've done that. I've suffered from sinus problems for years and allergies. And before I really became aware of what wonders acupressure could do, I would, you know, take certain remedies to see if it would help. And it really didn't help. It would upset my stomach. Then I found out about acupressure. Just by touching certain points on my temple, under my eye, the side of my nose, and between my index finger and my thumb, I could be totally relieved of a sinus headache in less than 20 minutes. And I'm talking a massive sinus headache that would normally put someone to bed because they're that sick. And it's about catching, and usually the funny thing about that, usually if there's a problem with the sinuses, okay, allergies and allergens and environmental do play a part, but if you've not been anywhere where you should have an allergic reaction, sometimes we find that we get that headache right there in the sinus area when we have irritation to a certain person or a certain place. That is where that energy usually hits us. And when you're aware of that, you can also realize, like, okay, what am I pulling in that is not resonating with my own body? Because as we go into higher consciousness, another thing that we're finding out, it's not about separateness anymore where you don't like somebody or you do like somebody. It's more about being discerning instead of judgmental. So if someone or something is not good for you, you know to just move away from it because it's not of the right frequency, because everything is about frequency now.
Yes. I assume, because I can't recall now what was in the book I saw that covered acupressure.
The acupressure facelift. The women love that. When I tell them that you can really look younger, you don't have to go under the knife, you don't have to distort your features, and when you put Botox in your face and you put collagen in your lips, you're putting a vibration in that does not belong there. You're hurting yourself. But when you can do that naturally, first of all, linking into like a higher consciousness, it's more uplifting, so it's going to show outwardly too. Just notice those old Buddhist monks, they're like in their late 80s and their skin is nice and tight because they've already linked into like a higher consciousness. And what's on the inside will be projected on the outside. But there are certain areas on your face that if you touch them, you trigger the muscles to tighten. And believe me, it works.
Well, that's wonderful. You've given all the ladies that are listening in some very useful information there.
And they love it.
Oh, indeed, I'm sure. Perhaps it'll even work for men.
it works for men, it works for women. Yeah. And I list different aromatherapies, the vibrations, and also even certain crystals that you can wear or carry as a remedy. And to some people that sound like so primitive, like who would use something as an aroma or a crystal when there are all these other methods? When you find out, when you get back to basics, they're more effective, they're less expensive, and they really work. I know in the Indian culture, the Vedics, they actually will construct certain rings and wear them on certain fingers to pull in energy to take care of ailments, and they work.
Mm. Well, having spoken about acupressure, do you think that massage is something like acupressure as far as doing miracles for you?
Yes, I highly recommend massage. I know Edgar Cayce was a big fan of it. What people need to realize is muscle holds memory. So the muscles in your body is where we hold a lot of our memory. Memory just from, you know, even a prior existence, what we call past life, whereas we find out in higher consciousness, it's a parallel life. It's running at the same time. Everything that's held within that consciousness filters down to this physical body. When you go through massage and you manipulate that energy, you help move it along so it doesn't get clogged. It's not blocked. And it's a very nice release. It's relaxing for the body and the mind. And it really helps you connect in more to your spiritual, divine side. Head massage is really good, too, for stimulating that pineal gland. I'm a big fan of that.
Yes.
That's amazing. A good head massage will really open the doors to enlightenment. And also foot reflexology. That is it's amazing. And they're inexpensive treatments. And what they do for you is they open up the portals for self-discovery through you letting your psychic senses be able to flow through.
Mm. So certainly very interesting subjects. I think you'll end up writing a whole series of books.
I would love to, because I know I had a prior incarnation as an Oriental doctor, someone who made tinctures or potions or whatever you would call more in medieval times. And I could see a string through a lot of different incarnations were always related somehow to healing and spirituality. It's been the main thread and the main theme that I've seemed to have carried through.
Hmm. That's very good indeed. Now, your book also talks about empowering shift pioneered by the indigos. So I know that indigos, perhaps like star seeds, star children and things, other names they give to more advanced youngsters, I guess, who have a greater level of consciousness. But how do they fit in?
Well, the indigos, the big influx came in the late 80s, although there have always been indigos on the planet because they were the rebels, the ones who had to start to make some breakthroughs or else we would have just stayed in the dark ages and never moved forward. The indigos have been mislabeled as ADD, ADHD, troublemakers. It's because they're very energy sensitive. They function from a higher energy. When you put these kids in a normal classroom, they're going to act up because they're so energy sensitive. And not realizing that we're, you know, dealing with an upgrade of the species, we chose to medicate them and label them as dysfunctional. And that's not the case. We see now that, okay, they just were intolerant of the false structures that were keeping us trapped and on the wheel of karma, which we need to get off. Then we move into the crystal children. They're less verbal. They're more sensitive to noise. These kids like to sit and text, and they too are, they, the thing they have in common, all of these kids, they're very sensitive to energy, vibration, and they're all very intuitive and creative. A lot of them are musically gifted. The indigos, they're all in some type of a band, or they like to write music. They're very good with music, the writers, poetry. The crystals are very gentle. They're our artists. We have assumed a lot of them were autistic. Maybe some of them are legitimately defective because of vaccinations they were giving, or medication or processed food that they couldn't handle. But just because someone is less verbal doesn't mean that they're damaged goods. We're moving into a time where we won't text anymore. Telepathy is how we're going to communicate. And as remote as that may seem, way back, you know the story of Mother Shipton. She lived in a cave in England, and she foresaw, you know, the train and cars long before anyone ever even dreamed of that. So things I'm talking about may seem crazy right now, but this is where we're going. We're going to be very energy sensitive, very telepathic, able to perceive something, so we can, you know whether or not to get involved. And as I said earlier, it states the case for us living a more authentic existence. No more lying, no more cheating, just be yourself and contribute to the planet instead of detract and be a taker.
Do you think that if we met someone who was an indigo, that in some way it would sort of register with us? Would there be any feelings or symptoms that would do that?
I'm familiar with the indigo, so I can usually tell when someone is an indigo. They seem to be a little, not rambunctious, they don't like to sit still. Always moving around or shifting from foot to foot, don't like to stay in one place too long. That's how can we think, well, are they ADD, or are they bipolar, or what is their problem? The problem is they're energy sensitive, and they have to stay in that constant flow of energy. If you have a conversation with them, they may jump from one subject to the next, only because their minds work faster at the speed of light. We're still on dial-up internet, and they are already on DSL as far as it goes, as consciousness is working. And the same thing with the crystals. They can sense when you don't feel well or if you have a problem. You don't even have to verbalize it with them. And once you become familiar and aware how to communicate with these children and these people, these young adults and their energies, you know, you start to almost raise your own vibration to become in tune with theirs. And that's how evolution comes about.
Yes. So do you think that the higher powers have a plan to bring people like the indigos into our earth or into our presence, particularly to push us towards this time of ascension? In other words, with their input, it helps to raise the vibration even further.
It does, because we need these rebels to go in and, you know, dismantle these false structures. For far too long, we have been, what causes most wars? Religious differences. Look at all the different religions we have in the world. That's, you know, that is just saying we still live in a world of separateness, and we're not going into the separateness. It's not about dogma anymore. It's about spirituality. Same thing with materialism. You know, how much money do you have, or who has this, or who has that? That's not important anymore. It's energy and spirituality are going to replace materialism and dogma. And we need these indigos to come in and have these sit-ins and protest and say we don't like this anymore. We don't want this anymore for our planet. We don't want to be poisoned by processed food. We demand that you disclose information, even disclose the information about the ETs. We all know we're not the only life force out in the vast universe. There are other star systems that they already know have terrestrial planets. And, you know, fear means false emotions appearing real. When you instill fear in someone, you make them freeze and you cripple them, and they're not able to move forward. So the indigos are here to say, get rid of this fear. Don't impose fear on us anymore. We want to come from a different place.
Right. What is this noise?
A noise? I don't have any noise. I don't. Maybe you hear something on your end.
Okay, we'll let this. Oh, the studio can probably deal with that. It's not really interfering with our conversation, but it was rather loud. Put me off my stroke, actually. Yes, so what about the other highly developed young people that are coming in? Because I think the Indigos, as you said, came in about the 1980s, and I think we've had what they call also star children. Presumably, it's sort of another layer up the tree to push us even quicker.
Yes, I mean, this is what we need. I mean, the children are our future. It's where we're going. It's where the planet's going. And we need what these rebels to stand up and really make the changes and build a better world for us. You know, everything's different now. Everything. Look how fast they learned. Kids are different. They're smarter, I think, than we were. I really do. They're quick. They catch on. And so many little kids, they seem intuitive. They sense energy. They're more aware.
Hello. Lisa, I left you for a brief spell there because the studio think the interference is on my line. So
I don't
know what can be done about it. I suppose if it gets too serious, we'll have to close the program. But we have more or less run our time, but we can carry on until you run out of things to say.
I totally enjoyed the interview. This is information that everyone needs to have, and that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because I feel that it's a quick start guide. It helps people understand what is the transformation, what is the shift, and what is 2012, and what is the next phase of our evolution. We did not reach the top of the food chain yet. That's for certain. You know, this is not the furthest we're going to go. You know, we're going to go a lot further.
Brilliant, yes, because I heard you mention things like karma, so you obviously believe in reincarnation. So you've got a very wide understanding, I must say. It's very good. I think in view of the noise, which I can still hear, although it's not too bad, perhaps we ought to start drawing to the end of the program. So would you like to give our listeners your website address or tell them where they can buy books? And if you invite emails, you give out your email address.
Yes, they can find me at www.lisaberetta.com. That's L-I-S-A, B as in boy, A as in apple, R-R, E as in Edward, T-T, A as in apple, .com. The book is available if you go to newpagebooks.com. You can buy it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, indie bookstores, Barnes & Noble in the UK, Amazon UK, Amazon throughout Europe. Also, I have an article coming out for Watkins Body, Mind, and Spirit. I believe it's the November issue, which a lot of the listeners may find interesting. It has a lot to do with what's really going on and should quell their fears about December 21st, 2012, I hope. And I have a Facebook page for the Book of Transformation. Everyone is invited to join the page and, you know, post interesting things they have about consciousness. I appreciate that.
All right. So let's just confirm that again. You've got an article coming out in a book or a magazine called Body, Mind, and Spirit. Did I get that correct?
Right. That's Watkins Body, Mind, and Spirit.
Okay, fine. Yes, that might prove to be of interest to people. Is there any aspect of your book or anything else that you'd like to mention? Is there anything we sort of missed that you wanted to talk about?
I really would like people to buy the Book of Transformation because it will take them all through the ascension process, tell them where the planet is, where we're at, even touch on, like, did we have some intervention in our DNA? Are we a designer species? How did we come about? And and how to protect yourself living in a world where you're psychically open. How do you handle being psychic? How do you protect yourself so you don't walk in and everything is exposed? So I give some good tips on that in Chapter 6.
Yes, I must say that's very, very useful. I think we may well have covered most of it then. I'm just quickly looking at some of the notes I've written down as you've been talking. Yeah, I think that really covers it now. Although I could just ask you finally, as you are an astrologer and you've been into numerology, is that part of what you also use to help people, or is that something really of the past?
Well, the astrology, that would be a book I'd love to do about the evolution of our astrology, because there are certain frequencies and it's how to work with these frequencies. And as we move into the age of Aquarius from the age of Pisces, there are certain stars within the constellation Aquarius that are very bright. So we'll be pulling in the frequencies from that star system, which will further enhance our DNA. And numerology, like I said earlier, the universe speaks to us in frequency through colors, through sound, through numbers. So if certain numbers follow you around, I even put a section in the book about that, how to recognize what certain numbers mean. Everyone has certain numbers that are either in their phone number or their address that follow them. Everyone is aware of 1111. That's the universal awakening code. But I get a little bit further into the real meaning of the numbers, and I think they may find it interesting.
Yes, that's interesting. Numerology has been one of those subjects that I've never really quite got into and been able to understand. For example, we have got 12-12 coming up. Do you see that being a day when anything special will happen?
When I look at the 12-12, I look at more as, you know, we have the 12 numbers around one block. So when we're coming up to 12-12, what's that telling us? It's like we're coming together. It's like the consciousness around, we're in one earth, the 12. 12 has always been somewhat of a significant number, even in certain religions where you had the 12 apostles. And were there also 12 knights of the round table too? I think there were 12 knights of the round table. So 12 has been a significant number throughout history. But I feel that when you tune into it and you approach it from a higher consciousness, you gather so much more information.
Yeah. Do you believe that through numerology you can actually get down to a single figure, which is the important number for you? In other words, by giving letters of the alphabet a certain value and maybe working out the final number for your whole name. Do you think it works in that way?
Well, I feel that what it is, every bit of information helps you. Say, for example, you're a nine or something. You know, nine will tune into spirituality. So possibly in this incarnation, it's a lot about your spiritual evolution or on your quest for spirituality. Are you a three? Are you more of a communicator? So if you start to work with the vibrations of what your life path is through your name, through your birthday, you'll be more open to recognize when certain synchronicities happen that lead you towards events or careers or people that will even help further you along. It's all about linking in. That's what this new awareness is about. It's about linking in and connecting and being conscious of ourselves and each other.
Right, fine. Now, there's one question I've always wanted to ask an astrologer, and it relates to the number of planets, because I have seen articles that say there you should be working on 13 planets. I think they've even got a name for the 13th one. Have you got any views on that type of astrological reading?
I do, because if we look back at the ancient Sumerians and the ancient astrologers, they were aware of the Pluto, of the planets that went out past Saturn. But then something happened where they only used the planets and they considered Saturn the limits. Was Saturn possibly only the limits for them then, because they weren't ready to pull in the energy from the other planets? So it looks like it may have shifted and changed throughout the ages. But now as we move more into a higher consciousness, there's a lot of talk about, some people call it Planet X, some people call it Nibiru, the planet of the crossing, which has appeared in a lot of ancient symbolisms as the winged disc, the circle with the wings on it. So until they start to disclose more information about exactly where the planet is within the solar system, then astrologers will be able to see, okay, what type of an effect is it having? Maybe on an unconscious level, we're picking up, you know, the change, the transformation, the return of something, of a golden age. but we can't really plot it in an ephemeris unless we know its position within the whole solar system. So when we get a position on it, we'll be able to see how it's interacting and what type of aspects it's making to the planets. And I also, in my book, I put in about the often overlooked 13th sign of the zodiac, which is very interesting. A lot of astrologers dispute it. They don't want to recognize it. They say it's rubbish, but there's a lot to that 13th sign of the zodiac, which is Ophiuchus. Nostradamus used it. So it was. This isn't anything new that we just dug up.
Yes, I have read that Nibiru, or I did read that Nibiru at one time was in our solar system and positioned behind the sun where it stays out of view. And yet recently I read that it's sort of outside the solar system, probably entering it now. Now, according to Sitchin, it has a peculiar orbit, but it does come through our solar system about every, I think it's 3,000 years or so. So can you actually work out where it ought to be?
Well, some people have said that, you know, people who follow Sitchin, I love Zachariah Sitchin myself, that this planet has an elliptical orbit. I believe it was some time, maybe possibly about a year and a half ago, they thought in Norway they saw two suns in the sky. Could that have been Nibiru? Where we are right now, we're approaching what they call the dark rift or the dark ribbon of the, you know, towards the galactic center. Is Nibiru possibly on the other side? When we pass through the galactic center, will Nibiru be visible? Maybe that will be the two suns in the sky, or what we think is the sun, because how big it will be. I really believe that it is going to be very significant. I've even heard that they said Mount Olympus really was, Nibiru was up there, and Mount Olympus was just some type of a structure that they would use to go up and down from Nibiru, where they thought the gods resided, which is interesting. I've heard a lot of different theories, and I believe myself, my own personal beliefs are, that the truth about this planet or archived somewhere, I feel, just intuitively, instinctively, I feel that they're archived somewhere within the Vatican Library. And they should be released, and it should be disclosed.
I must say, I have read things about the Vatican Library, and it is a pity that a lot of ancient documents and things of that nature, and I think they even have artifacts there, are hidden away, and they're not meant to be seen.
Yeah, they don't feel that we're ready. We're not ready for it. The same thing with the Great Pyramid, you know, there's something in there that they don't want us to know about or we can't see. But once we become more enlightened and we're more in tune and we're more sensitive to energy and basically more psychic, we will just know. We will just know through the energy what it is, or they won't be able to hide anything anymore. We will just know. So that could be the revelation. The word apocalypse actually means to reveal, means a revelation. Yeah. So that could be it. The veil's lifted. An apocalypse could be where everything's going to be finally revealed to us. We won't be in the dark anymore, or the dark rift of the Milky Way. We're coming more into the light, which is right. Exciting. Yeah. If you go in there with fear, it, of course you're going to, you know, just freeze up and not be able to move. You let go of the fear and you go with the flow, and it's riding a new wave in.
Yes, indeed, that would be a wonderful time. And I wouldn't be surprised if already a percentage of the people on the Earth are already developing that sort of instinct or intuition where they do tend to know the truth. And maybe this is what is bringing a lot of it out now, the things that were hidden are gradually being revealed, and they're coming out like no one's business, I think.
Exactly. It's a great time for all of us.
Yes, I think so. It's exciting. I mean, it doesn't matter how many different views people take of it. I think the most central point in all this is that something very big is going to happen at the end of the year, which is going to carry us forward. It'll be a big jump, I think. So I don't think we need to worry too much about the exact details or the nature of it or how it will happen. Anyway, it's been very interesting to have you on. You certainly have a lot of knowledge there, and as far as I'm concerned, I consider myself to be reasonably in touch with things. You're very accurate, and you've done a very good job there. So I wish you every success with your book. It must contain even a lot more information than we've spoken about.
Well, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll be able to talk again before the December 21st, and we'll have a better idea of what it is and help people through this transformation.
Oh, boy, I don't think it would be too many weeks before things start to happen, but that would be a nice idea, yes. So, thanks again for coming on. This time sped by. It's a shame we had a little bit of an interruption there, but never mind, we seem to have got through that. So thank you very much, Lisa.
Oh, thank you so much. I so much enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, friends, you had another interesting person that's come onto the program. My guest next week is someone who is returning, who is Guy Stephen Needler, who's written two wonderful books, which are probably mainly for people that have advanced knowledge of spiritual matters. They might be a little bit too heavy for some people. One is called The History of God, and his latest book is called Beyond the Source. Now, I've read the first one and into the second one, and I find it extremely absorbing and very informative. So we're obviously going to talk about Guy, about his books, and the remarkable thing is that he can talk directly with what is called the source energy, which we would normally call the God of this universe, and also gets a link with what we would call the creator, which as far as he's concerned is called the origin. Now that's remarkable, and I suppose a lot of people are saying, that can't be done, it isn't possible. But I invite you to come along next week and listen to what Guy has got to say. He again is a very knowledgeable person. Now, in that connection, I would like to say that for people who are already aware of him, perhaps through the last program, that he is coming over here with Dolores Cannon in September. They're making two appearances, one in Farringdon in Oxfordshire, and one in London, St Pancras. I know this is purely for the listeners who live this side of the water in England, or of course generally Great Britain. But if you want to know more information about that, if you go to the website www.ozarkmt, I'll spell that because it's all one word, O-Z-A-R-K-M-T, ozarkmt.com, you can get all the information on there. If you get stuck on that, just search for Guy Needler. His last name is spelled N-E-E-D-L-E-R. Between the two of them, you'll find the information you want. So I hope you can join me next week, and thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.